And this morning we're going to talk about the worthy woman in Proverbs chapter 31. I don't think I've ever done a lesson on this, so I hope it goes okay. And I want to ask for a show of hands. Never done that before either, but how many ladies have ever been in a Bible class, ladies' Bible class, where you've actually studied Proverbs 31 in a context to figure out what it means to be a good woman? Oh, wow. Quite a few. Second question. Raise your hand. How many men have ever been in a men's Bible class where you've studied Proverbs 31 to learn what a good woman might be that you would want to marry? I see one hand. Oh, I see two, but that's because you're in my class. So. Two verses 50. Isn't that amazing? Ironically, I want to suggest to you that Proverbs 31 was not written to women, but it was written to men, young men, to help them learn what a good wife would be as they go try to find one. In fact, I would even suggest to you that the whole book of Proverbs is characterized by a father who is trying to teach his son about marrying the right women. And I'll say more about that. Man, this is just from chapters 1 through 10, and I'm not going to read all through those, but you can see overwhelmingly how he is addressing his son in all of these proverbs that he's trying to teach him. So it's a father who's talking to his son, by and large, in this book. And what he wants them to do is he wants them to his son to marry the right women. And I did use the term plural for women, though. Really, this father wants his son, in the flesh and blood sense, he wants his son to marry the right girl. But on another level, in another sense, he wants his son to marry the right women. And first of all, he wants him to marry the right women on a figurative level. He wants him to choose the path of wisdom. And in this book, he represents the path of wisdom by a woman that he calls Lady Wisdom, she should be chosen in marriage. In contrast, he presents foolishness and folly, likewise, as a woman. Only she's Lady Folly. So in the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, as you read through those, he tells us about Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, two women. They're different women, and they represent two different paths that one might take in life. And as he goes through chapters 1 through 9, he keeps saying, you know, look at how beautiful Lady Wisdom is. You know, what an attractive wife she would make. And he also warns of Lady Folly and what kind of troubles and what kind of dangers there would be in marrying her. And he has both of these women prepare a feast, kind of prepare their banquet, and they stand in the Lady Wisdom stands in the streets and up on the hilltop, and she calls out to the young men and says, come here and partake of my feast. Eat of what I have and live. And then there's Lady Folly, and she sits in her doorway, and she sort of tries to lure the young men that pass by her door, and she says, no, you come in here, partake of my feast and live. Only she doesn't have a feast. She sort of has, she kind of just says, stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. So they offer their ways, and their feast is offered to the simple. Not really to the person who's ignorant, but really in terms of the young and the inexperienced, the naive person, the young man who just doesn't know. And they offer their dinners, and each of these women extend an invitation, and they say, please come in here and partake of what I have to offer. And I want to suggest to you that really this is the theme of the book of Proverbs. The theme of the whole book. There are really two paths that you can take in life. And they can be compared to two women. Either wisdom or folly. And he wants his son, figuratively speaking, to marry the right one. To choose the way of wisdom. But he also wants his son to marry the right girl in the literal sense. And in the early chapters, he sort of warns him to avoid the adulterous woman. She's the flesh and blood version of Lady Folly. And there's even a whole chapter devoted to that in chapter 7. But in the first chapters, he doesn't really show the son, the woman that he wants him to marry. He saves her to the very end of the book in chapter 31. And that's not an accident. I couldn't figure it out. Why would he tack on this at the very end? The last thing in Proverbs didn't seem right to have this worthy woman at the very end. But I think it's very deliberate. She is like the consummation of the whole book. After showing him in all the preceding chapters the way of wisdom as a choice in life to follow God and His commandments, now he shows him the woman that corresponds to that. The woman he really ought to marry. And she is the worthy woman. And you can see how she compares to the adulterous woman or Lady Folly. She is the worthy woman. She is really the embodiment of wisdom. This Proverbs 31 lady. She is a living example of all the virtues that he had presented in the preceding chapters. She has chosen wisdom for herself, and therefore she is the one that her son ought to marry. And as you start looking through Proverbs chapter 31, you can find at the beginning, in the middle, and the end, the appeal is really to the son. And he says, who can find an excellent wife? And I want us just to go through these 22 verses and note the things that Solomon emphasizes. And I say Solomon, some people would say it's Lemuel at the beginning of the book, but I'm not sure about that. It's not really worth spending a lot of time on. It might be. But I'm going to suggest to you that it's probably Solomon who's still talking to his son as it fits into the larger context of this book. And he gives her gives him the characteristics of the worthy woman. So let's just look at those for a few minutes, and the lesson will be yours. The first thing that he tells him is that she can be trusted. She can be trusted with anything. He says, an excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Verse 16, too. She considers a field and buys it for her earnings, and she plants a vineyard. I mean, it's obvious that the husband trusts in his wife to do such things, to enter into transactions, to handle money in an effective way. Verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her husband, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She anticipates, you know, he trusts her to anticipate what the family needs, to make necessary preparations. We can, all of us, you know, who are married can see that when our wives in the springtime start looking for those sales. You know, and sometimes she's looking for the sales of winter clothes, things that are going out of season to buy because they're all on sale, and prepare for next season when her kids aren't going to be able to wear the things they wore last year. And we're all going, do you really have to buy that right now? Because, you know, I'd really like to build this summer. And she says, listen, do you want me to buy that clothes, those clothes for $5, those shirts for $5, or do you want me to wait till the fall and buy them for $20? You know, she knows how to prepare. She anticipates those things. And prepares for the what the family will need. And so he can trust her. In every respect, it seems like this man can trust his wife. Her fidelity, with his money, with his children. He can go to work and he knows that they're in good hands, that she'll take care of them, that she will nurture them, that she will provide for them the training that they need. And so I as a practical point, I mean, I suggest to young men, when asking the question, who would you marry, you need to ask yourself the question, what will you entrust to her? And maybe even more importantly, what would you not entrust to her? Verse 11 again, the heart of her husband trusts in her. Important point as you choose a wife for yourself. Second point, she honors her husband. This woman, as we read this text, honored her husband. Verse 11 and 12, the heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of his life. And then drop down to verse 23. It says, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. It seems the real point here is that her interest, her devotion, her focus, is on honoring her husband. She seeks to make a name for her husband. Now, interestingly, in doing that, she also makes a name for herself. She makes a name for herself before her husband and her children, for example. Look at the very end of this chapter, verse 28 and 29. Her children rise up and bless her, and her husband also. And he praises her and says, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. So she makes a name for herself among her family. But not only among her family, she even makes a name for herself among those outside of her family. Verse 31, give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. So not only is the husband well known in the gates, but she is well known. Not that she has become such because that's what her goal was. It's not a goal she set for herself, but because she was honoring her husband and her family as well. And as indirectly, she became well known. And I think that reminded me of the book of Ruth. Remember Ruth, who was the Moabite woman who went to Israel and married Boaz, and a whole book is devoted to her. But in chapter 3 and verse 11, Boaz says to Ruth, everyone in town knows you are a worthy woman. She had made a name for herself. Not because Boaz was her husband yet, she hadn't married him as of yet, but because of the service and the way that she had cared for her mother-in-law. She had sacrificed herself, and in seeking to build her family up, she had acquired the reputation of the excellent woman. So she can be trusted with anything, this worthy woman. She honors her husband. That's a characteristic of the worthy woman. A third one is that she's a tireless worker. Verse 27 says she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. And then look at some of these other verses, verse 13 through 19. Let's read that. She looks for the wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Verse 15, she rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. And then look at verse 17. She girds herself with strength, makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. And then look at verse 24. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Makes you tired just reading about her, right? She's a tireless worker. And that makes us a little bit uncomfortable. I thought before maybe, it seems like they all say more about her devotional life in this. Or maybe about how tenderly she cares for her children. But really over half the verses in some way or another in this text relate to her industriousness. The largest, and maybe that section of this focuses on the things she's busy with. And maybe that shouldn't surprise us too much, because earlier in the book of Proverbs, a lot of that, the book, is devoted to a warning against the sluggard, the lazy person, right? We know that the sluggard appears quite a few times, and that can be a man or a woman. And the main character in the earlier chapters of the book, one of them is the sluggard. And many proverbs are devoted in the earlier part of the book as to how to find success at the things you do. And this woman seems to embody this teaching. She's already put into application some of these principles into her own life. But not only is she a worker, she is a woman of some means and some prosperity. You read through this. She has a family she had servants. Her husband was a man who was respected in the gates. He was a man that was of some high standing in the city. This woman is, from a relatively high social station in life, probably pretty well off. And maybe we shouldn't be too surprised at that, since this book is by Solomon. And the royal court was of that nature. But even in this social station, she works with her hands. Even when it's dark, she gets up and she works at night. And this woman maybe didn't have to do that. She may have been able to get someone else to do that for her. But she did it because she thought it was right. And I guess for young men, that's something else to think about. you know, as you look for a worthy woman. A worthy woman contributes to the economy of the family. She doesn't, she's not a drain on it. Men tend to make jokes about that a lot. But she was not an expensive woman. She was a woman that was not simply there to be pampered and taken care of. She was a worker. You know, if you marry a woman who is not that, then she probably won't be one later either. While I say that, and this woman is certainly a tireless worker, she's not a workaholic, if you understand that term. She's not a workaholic. She is in her work sacrificing herself for others. She puts others before herself. She rises up while it's still night. Verse 15 says, notice the emphasis. She rises while it is night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. Verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. So the emphasis is on her work as it involves her family. Even her maidservants, even the poor outside the family benefits from her. But those who primarily benefit are her household, and she sacrifices herself for them. So she's a tireless worker. That's something else about this woman as we look at her. She's a career woman. And that's kind of attracted a great deal of attention. Verse 16 says she considers a field and buys it. And from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. That's attracted a great deal of attention, especially from those who have taken a feminist approach to the Bible. They use the term egalitarian to speak of marriage, not so much, they speak of it more in terms of a partner approach, as opposed to the husband as being the head of the household. And they say, look here, here's a career woman here. Well, she is a career woman, but what's her career? Is it real estate? Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it from her earnings. Or is it agriculture? She takes her earnings and she plants a vineyard. Is it textiles and weaving? Is that her career? Verse 19, she stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. Is it in food service? Verse 13, where she looks for the wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. Oh, I'm sorry, verse, that's the clothing. Is she a clothing expert? Is she in labor management? Is she in merchandise? Is she a purchasing agent or into buying? Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Is she in education? You know, she's got the law of kindness. She's a teacher. You think about this. She's all of the above, isn't she? This woman is all of the above. You think of the implications. Never underestimate the task of a homemaker, the skills that are required. I don't have the little sheet anymore, but sometimes somebody wrote an article and they said, you know, a woman has to be skilled in many things. She has to be a nutritionalist, and she has to be a fashion designer, she has to be a child psychologist, she has to be an arbiter, and there's 20 different things that kind of characterize a medic, you know, a nurse, and characterizes all the different, well, this is the same thing, just written in a format maybe a few thousand years earlier. But her career is none of those things individually, but her career is in her home. She's a businesswoman, but her business is her home and her household. And that requires all the qualities of a good manager. It requires planning. It requires initiative. Verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. You know, she knows, she anticipates the coming needs. Verse 27, she looks ahead. It says, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. This woman's a perceptive woman. Verse 18, she senses that her gain is good. The things that she makes, she knows that they're valuable, but she knows how to make good judgments about handling and estimates of all those kind of things. But it's all a part of building up her household, which is her dedication. That is her career. So she can be trusted with anything. She honors her husband. She's a tireless worker. She's a career woman. And she is a beautiful woman. Now, look at verse 30 for a second. It says here, when it does comment on her beauty, it says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. And, you know, that's kind of disconcerting sometimes. You know, young man sees a woman that he's kind of interested in, but he says, oh, I can't look at her, can't think she's attractive. That's the wrong thing to do. Can't play any part in the decision whatsoever. Well, that's really difficult because, quite honestly, you know, most of us are attracted in the beginning by the appearance of the person that we meet. And, you know, the idea that external beauty is unimportant, I would suggest that's just false on a number of levels. Number one, if God doesn't have any concern about it whatsoever, then you need to go and read Song of Solomon. And that's all I need to say about that. It is apparent that there is a place for physical attractiveness to the opposite sex in the Bible. Verse 32, it says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. Doesn't say that it's bad. Doesn't say that it's unimportant. But it's deceitful. Riches can be deceitful. Riches aren't bad in and of themselves, but they can be deceitful if we trust in them. Beauty is important. But it's really not the beauty that she was born with that we read about in this text. It's the beauty that she creates. She is able to create beauty in her own household. Look at verse 21. It says, she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. You know, she could have clothed them with burlap, and they would have been perfectly warm, but she didn't do that. She clothed them with scarlet. And the scarlet has come from her own labor and her own hands and her own work. She created beauty within her household. She created beauty in her own person. Verse 22 says she makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. She dresses decently. Sometimes people kind of will look condescendingly upon the woman who dresses very casually and plain. And then sometimes the woman who dresses very plain will look condescendingly upon the woman who dresses nicely. And I think there's fault on both sides of that. This woman dresses herself nicely. And maybe she does it for her husband. I don't know. But she dressed herself nicely. In verse 25, though, her beauty was really not in her clothing, was it? It says, strength and dignity are her clothing. Strength and dignity. Her character, her demeanor, her behavior, and things, you know, physically that she has done, you know, she's created beauty both in herself and in her home. She may or may not have been beautiful as far as the world considers beauty, but she knows how to make beauty, and I think that's what's important. And that's part of who she is. The question to ask is not, is she a pretty woman, but can she make things around her beautiful? That's something that a young man needs to ask when he chooses a woman. What will she make in my family? Will she make a beautiful family? Will she make things beautiful? Not is she beautiful. More than that, she does. The more she does of that, the more she does these things in her family and for her, those around her, the more her true beauty is perceived. But she's also something else. Not only a beautiful woman, this text says she's going to be a generous woman. The verse 20 says she extends her hand to the poor and she stretches out her hand to the needy. Proverbs emphasizes that generosity is a lot of times neglected. And there are 22 verses that I found specifically that address being generous to the poor. Really that's addressed more than just about any other topic in the book of Proverbs other than the control of the tongue and the passages about the fool, that the need to be generous to those who are poor. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 31, just one example of that, says that he who oppresses the poor taunts his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him. And she, this worthy woman, has already taken that teaching and made it a part of who she is. She is the embodiment, again, of wisdom. men, we tend to think that once we make all that money, then we'll start being generous to people who are in need. But I want to suggest that you will not be as generous as you could be if your wife is not generous too. If she's not a generous person, then it'll be much harder for the man to be generous to others. She won't be likely, if she's not generous to others, she probably won't be very generous to you either, because she's put herself first. But not this woman. She is a woman who is generous. She also teaches wisdom, verse 26. Proverbs chapter 31 again, verse 26. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. The wisdom she embodies, she teaches. She does that with her example, certainly. She teaches as she takes care of her maidens, as she takes care of her servants, as she does good for other women, as she takes care of her children. This is a way that she teaches by her example. She teaches hard work and generosity and dependability and sacrifice and kindness. And most of our children, as they grow up, will probably be the product of the time that they spent with their mother. They will imitate her. They will learn her ways as they spend hours with her every day. And if they're dependable, it's probably because a lot of reason because the woman is dependable. I'm not taking away from the role of the father, but they spend most of their time with their mother. And they will be generous a lot of times if their mother is generous. And they'll be kind if their mother is kind. And this woman is a woman who teaches by her tongue as well. Not only by her example, but by her tongue. Just the at the beginning of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8 said, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck." So she'll teach him not only by her actions, but also with her words. So the law of kindness is on her tongue. She also brings joy to people around her. Verse 25. It says, "Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future." I like chapter 10 and verse 28 too. Let's look back at that one. Chapter 10 and verse 28. Where he says, "The hope of the righteous is gladness. The expectation of the wicked perishes." The hope, same word for expectation, of the person who is righteous is gladness. She anticipates good things. She anticipates joy. She anticipates gladness. She fears the Lord. This woman has made preparations for her household. She helps others. She has an optimism about the future. She raises her children in the nurtured admonition of the Lord. And so she can smile. She can expect good things that will come. She isn't always worried. She isn't always complaining. She isn't always frustrated. I thought about that because there's a contrast to that in this book. There's another kind of woman that this book talks about, one that his son, he would not want to marry. Look back in chapter 21. She's called the contentious woman. She's always nagging, and she's always complaining, and she always is creating problems in the family. And he speaks here about a different woman. He says, "It's better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman." Or chapter 27 and verse 15, he comes back to that same subject again. You know, we learn things by repetition. So you shouldn't be surprised if you see a number of proverbs repeated at various times without a whole lot of difference in the point that they're making. We learn by hearing it over and over, especially young men. We got to hear it at least a dozen times before it starts sinking in. But chapter 27 and verse 15 again, he says, "A constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike." So that's the contrast to the worthy woman in chapter 31. This woman is not like that. She anticipates good things. She smiles at the future. And when she smiles, the rest of her house can smile with her. She, finally, embodies the fear of the Lord. Verse 30. "Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but the woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised." That's sort of the keynote of the book, isn't it? Chapter 1, verse 7, at the very beginning of the book of Proverbs, he tells us, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. The opening statement is about the fear of the Lord and the wisdom that's there, and the closing statement of the book is the same way. Young man, the father says, the place to start is with the fear of the Lord. And then he says, young man, the place to end is the fear of the Lord. You can find it in this woman. She's both the end to be attained, and she is the means to the end of choosing the way of wisdom. She is a woman who fears the Lord, and that brings blessings to the man who will find her. Obviously, I think this is directed to young men, but indirectly it's certainly addressed to women too. But in all of this, you know, the larger context of the book of Proverbs is about choosing the way of wisdom and not choosing the way of folly. If you choose the way of wisdom, if you choose Lady Wisdom, then you're going to find life, you're going to find refreshment, you're going to find good things. I'm not saying life will be perfect, but it certainly will make things much better. She will lead you to life. If you choose Lady Folly, she will lead you to death. It's a call of the Bible. The Lord has provided us wisdom in Jesus Christ. Maybe today you haven't chosen the Lord. It's the way of wisdom. It's not what the world would recommend. They would scoff at that. But that shouldn't surprise us, because God's thoughts are so much higher than ours, and He's always going to say just about the opposite of what we think. He calls us to wisdom, calls us to follow His Son, and so we encourage you to do that this morning. The way of that, the way to enter into Christ, is by means of baptism. For some, that's been an offensive invitation. Baptism is just an external act, just obedience, but it really doesn't mean anything. But Peter says in 1 Peter 3 and verse 15 that baptism now saves you. Not the washing of the flesh, but the cleansing of the conscience. And if we want our conscience cleansed, we want those sins that we've committed removed, so that we're no longer guilty of those things before God. If we want the confidence that we can be in a relationship with God, we have to take those steps and obey Him the way He said. Can we invite you to do that today? Make a decision today while you have the opportunity and while we're standing and singing our song.